Welcome back to this week's episode of Electric Podcast. I'm Fred Lambert, your host, and this week we're going to thank our sponsor, Wander Capital, the easiest way to invest in large-scale solar energy projects across the U.S. With Wander, you can help finance renewable energy projects while earning up to 7.5% annually. To learn more, please visit wondercapital.com/electric. That's wondercapital.com/electric. So as usual, this week I'm with Seth. How are you doing, Seth?
I'm well, Fred.
Great, great, great. And this week we have plenty of news to talk about because, of course, it was the shareholder meeting, Tesla's 2018 shareholder meeting back in Mountain View. And that generated a ton of Tesla news and also other things this week also came out. But shareholders meeting, first of all, was very well received by shareholders in general because the next day, as soon as the market opened, Tesla stock price started trending up and closed it at 10%, which was like the best day in best day of the year. I think it's if you find another best day, you have to go back 2017.
Up 10%, right?
Yeah, 10% by the end of the day. And of course, the actual meeting started with the formalities, and they had a few items that the shareholders needed to vote on. There was a few controversies this year, but as usual, we thought that the shareholders will vote with the board, and they did with each of the items, including the one that would have removed Elon Musk from the position of chairman. Unsurprisingly, that wasn't a very popular suggestion. There were three board members that were up for re-election: Kimball Musk, Elon's brother, Antonio Gracias, a longtime board member, and the first re-election of one of the new independent board member, in this case, James Murdoch, which was the only one that we thought that, in being a little less popular than the others, might be an issue for his re-election. Actually not. He was even more popular in the final count than Antonio Gracias, which was very surprising.
That is kind of surprising.
Yeah, I think he got up to like 75% of the vote for him. So, of course, like Elon Musk counts for 25%, 22% alone. Then you have all the other board members. Then if they can get like Fidelity and Gilly Gifford.
And Blackwater.
The other big firm in Scotland that is one of Tesla's huge shareholders.
Is the big one too.
BlackRock is also a big shoulder, okay. So that went through. Then the last thing was a proposal for a proxy statement, so a little bit more board accountability for shareholders. That didn't pass either. That was the one that was the closest one, though, but still nowhere near a majority to get the vote on. But then after that, Elon Musk comes on stage, and that's where the funds start. No, not really for Elon, though. He almost started
right
crying.
Right off the bat, emotional, almost broke down in tears.
Like, were you surprised by that?
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't expecting it, for sure. It certainly heartfelt. He's certainly an emotional fellow. Reminds me of Steve Jobs a little bit in that way.
You know that more than me, but as Steve Jobs, I don't remember him that being that much emotional. He would create emotion for other people, but himself, he wouldn't show much emotion, right?
I think behind the scenes he did quite a bit.
Yeah.
If you read his biographies and stuff, he broke down quite a bit.
Okay. Broke down in anger or in...
A little bit of both, but I know he cried a lot, apparently.
But in this case, that was really like... he did it when he was thanking people for investing in Tesla and buying Tesla's mm-hmm. vehicles. So it really was a... He felt people's love for Tesla, I think, more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's endearing. Like, you know, if you're not like a 5-year-old and make fun of somebody for crying, which we kind of are doing, I guess. But
yeah.
If you're, you know, like it's a genuine sign of like, you know, appreciation. And, he's done it a few times. There was like an interview I remember mm-hmm. when he was talking about, how close they were to insolvency in 2008. I think actually at another board meeting, he broke down a little bit when he was talking about how Texas Texas car dealers were usurping democracy.
Exactly. Yeah, that was it. Yeah.
So it's not,
and for SpaceX too, one time I remember for it was talking about the astronauts that before Congress they give a little swipe at SpaceX for NASA going commercial with SpaceX, and that really got to him too.
Yeah, so I mean, not unprecedented, not out of character, but kind of surprising, especially like opening remarks instead of having something prepared. It's just breaking down a little bit. So
and you know, like I heard like the usual Tesla naysayers and the shorts, people with short interest on Tesla stocks. Every time that happens, I hear them come out and say that Elon is actually acting like it's a facade.
He's faking it?
Yeah, he's faking it. It's a facade. I don't buy it at all because I don't know a lot of grown men that will be willing to cry. He didn't cry. Like,
no, he just got choked
that
up.
Much emotion in public just for like financial gain. I think like just
no, it seems legit.
Yeah, it really does. So people with short interest in Tesla are down to right now. They are like trying to say that Elon Musk is
those are the people who should be crying, really.
Yeah. So, yeah. Certainly this week, since they lost like $1 million on Wednesday, $1 billion, excuse me, altogether. And, the other thing that they said too is that all the questions that Musk responded to during the meetings, and some of them came from Twitter, some of them were from people in the audience, of course, but others came from Twitter, and a few of them apparently were from people that had little to no followers, and some of them thought that Elon actually or Tesla's team created the question with fake accounts, which is bullshit.
So desperate. Whatever.
Yeah, because I know tons of people that never use Twitter and they just have an account to follow Elon Musk because, of course, Elon Musk uses Twitter extensively. So if you're following Tesla, it makes sense that you would follow
the same.
Elon Musk.
The same probably goes for Donald Trump, although we know he's got quite a bit of bot following as well.
Yeah.
So,
oh, for sure, Elon has bots following them too, but that's not his doing. That is just like the way Twitter works and. Anyway,
let's get to the substance of the meeting.
Getting to those, that was actual question from the bots that created the Elon Musk response that were actually company manufacturers. So one of the very popular one that came out of it was the Model Y. A quick update on the Model Y with a picture, an image of a sketch.
Like teaser.
Yeah, there was a rendering that they released last year that you can see sort of the front end of the car. Doesn't look like much. Look pretty much like a Model 3, a little bit higher. Now we have a design sketch of the vehicle, which give us some better idea of the 3/4 front of the car. Though they do it in a way that you don't see the doors, and I think that's an important thing.
But you do see the glass go up over the top, which I think makes it
you're right. I didn't realize
likelihood of doors more. More likely. It does look like in the original one that you could almost see some kind of line across the top. But
so you mean like it's a similar panoramic windshield as the Model X, and
of course
the way that the windshield works, it reach out all the way back to the top of the Falcon wing doors.
Right.
Because originally Elon Musk said that the Model Y would also get the Falcon wing doors, but that was like 2 years ago, maybe.
Right. And sometimes things change. Although,
didn't talk about it since, so it could have easily changed.
You know, it does look a little bit taller than I would have expected. Like the front end looks almost taller than the Model X, even, just from the sketch.
Mm-hmm.
It's just curious to me, why are they making it so tall like that?
I think it's going to be the same height as the Model X. Is mainly going to be shorter than the Model X, I think, because
blunter.
You're just going to have one less row, basically, of seats. You can make a Model X with one less row of seat, and with, of course, the same powertrain or a similar powertrain as the Model 3 instead of the way the Model S share with the Model X.
The other thing I took away from this rendering, or whatever it is that it also kind of looks like a pickup truck.
This
front end could easily just be...
Yeah, the front end is harder, right? It's like, unlike the Mold, it's the thing that's the less like the Mold 3 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you think maybe they could be like same platform, Model Y, a small pickup?
In fact, I would be surprised if Tesla doesn't take advantage of that, you know, possibility, because, you know, we know that a pickup truck is basically, you know, kind of an SUV with a very simple back end, you know. It's not typically a totally different platform. Like, you know, you have the Chevy S10 and the S10 Blazer, and it's kind of just, you put a back on it. So, I don't know. I would like to see that. I know if you look at the U.S. in particular, the pickup market is one of the biggest, if not the biggest, market that Tesla is not in yet. So,
oh yeah, for sure. I've been saying it for over a year now that Tesla, even if they're not ready to bring it to production, the all electric pickup truck, they need to unveil a working prototype like they did with the Model 3 before, like they did with the Roadster, what they did like all their most recent cars, and start taking orders for it.
Yep.
And do the same thing that they did with the Model 3, where a flurry of orders came in, and the market, the whole industry took notice from there. It's like, people for sure want an affordable EV. That's what happened with the Model 3. And I think they would find out the same thing with an all-electric pickup truck. They say, oh, the market wants an all-electric pickup truck. We need to wake up. And Ford, instead of planning F-150 with a hybrid powertrain without a plug-in in 2020, I mean, I think those plans would go out the windows pretty quick. And they'll go with at least a plug-in, hopefully even an all-electric powertrain, hopefully. The other thing that Musk mentioned when he talked about the Model Y is that he sort of cracked a joke, but isn't totally a joke, as is his usual way to sometimes announce things. He said that there could be no steering wheel on the Model Y. They were starting talking about it when, again, there was a woman there that talked again about vegan interiors in the car, no use of leather at all, and they had an issue with the fact that you can get an all vegan interior except for the steering wheel, though you can order it as an off-menu item, if you will. And Musk took the opportunity to mention that the Model Y will not have any leather at all. And then he added, I'm quoting, even in the steering wheel, even if it does have a steering wheel, in thinking the fact that maybe will not have a steering wheel.
I guess that's on the table, or off the table or something. Like, you know, if the Tesla network is in full effect at that point, maybe they sell a few that are just Tesla network.
Yeah, that's why I think it's possible, because the timing. So he also updated the timing recently that it's going to be early to mid 2020 for the production of the Model Y. And recently he also talked about the timing for it fully self-driving, which he said in about 2 years. So that's pretty much the same timing as the Model Y. So if he's correct with that, but of course he's been wrong about the timing of Tesla's development in full term of autonomous driving features. So
usually he's a little bit optimistic.
Yeah. And the same thing could happen for the Model Y too, so we don't know.
Sure.
So if he's equally wrong for each timeline, then it's still end up at the same time, still doesn't have to have a steering wheel.
Yeah, but you want to believe that he's learning from the experience and the mistakes.
He did mention that too, right? During the thing, actually, it was Galileo who asked him. He wanted to see if he could factor in some of Elon's issues with timing into his model for Tesla when Tesla announced something. And Elon admitted that he has a problem with it, and he's trying to adjust. But I mean, I'm sure, and that's another thing that the naysayers are saying, that Elon is actually lying about the timing and stuff like that. I don't think he's lying. I think he's really just ultra optimistic about these things, and you have to take it into account. But you cannot just most of the time he knows more than us. I mean, he knows all the information, more information than us. So he's in better position to advance a timeline than anybody else.
Yes.
The other car that was a surprise. A surprise outing at the shareholders meeting was a new prototype of the next gen Roadster.
Oh man, that thing looks awesome!
Yeah, it does. In white, it was a white one. So when Tesla unveiled the Roadster, I at the Tesla Semi event last year, we saw a red one, the one that Seth rode in, was a fully working prototype. Then there was also a gray one. The gray one wasn't a working prototype one. It was just sitting there. Sort of not a clay model, but like a version on top of the clay model or built around the clay model. And I think it's the same thing this time that they brought a shareholder meeting. It doesn't look like a working prototype because we don't see any interior at all. Though it seems to be pretty advanced because if you look at the body parts, the panels, the body panels, it looks like they're the working panels because on top of it you can see where you can remove the top because you can remove the top on the new Roadster like the old one. But I don't see an interior at all. So if you could see an interior, we could have a better idea, but we don't see it here.
I'm going to go off on a little rant here. I think that Tesla would do quite well for itself if they, of course, they have to make the original Roadster, you know, with like 200 kilowatt hours of batteries and a 255 mile top speed. And then they have to make the Founders Edition, which is even faster and probably, you know, you know, there's a SpaceX version of it, which
SpaceX package,
which, you know, we'll get to that later, I guess. But I think that Tesla would do incredibly well if they just made the Roadster with like a normal, you know, 80 kilowatt hour battery pack, just two engines, not three, or maybe even just one engine, or yeah, probably two would be good, all wheel drive, and sold it for like, you know, 80,000 or 100,000 or something. And I'm sure it would still go 0 to 60 in under 3 seconds. And I mean, it's just a gorgeous vehicle, looks so nice. I just kind of wish it was more accessible, even though for a supercar, you know, 200,000 or 250,000 is quite reasonable. Mm-hmm. I just hope that it gets into more hands.
Yeah, I agree with you in principle. I just think from Tesla's standpoint, from a business standpoint, it cannot be the same design because that's I know what you're trying. Like you're trying like more like a Miata. Well, those still more expensive than a Miata. And I think there's a big opportunity to electrify that segment for sure. But that's not what Tesla is trying to with the Roadster. They really, like Elon reiterated it at the shareholder meeting. He said that it's a way to get a smackdown to gas-powered cars and remove the halo effect that they have by still dominating the higher end of this of the higher end segments of the passenger car market, supercars.
Yeah, and I stand my post at the time that's not just the halo car of Tesla. That's the whole electric car industry.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. But so, and it's going to do that. So I know what you mean, just having like a lesser powertrain that could be cheaper and everything. But if you keep the same design, then you devalue the more expensive one. So you still have to have not just a higher powertrain for that 200,000 plus vehicle. You also have to have that unique design. But yeah, Tesla should definitely make something similar. Maybe remove the back seat, or that we have never seen the supposedly present back seat in the next gen Roadster. Have a slightly different design, and yeah, could that powertrain in half for sure? Well below 100 kilowatt hour. Like I'm sure it can be very efficient, very efficient car. So even with like a 60 kilowatt hour battery pack, it could do a lot. And a lot of people just doesn't want that 3 seconds 0 to 62. So they just want
And it's not even a 2-seat car like the Miata or the original Roadster. It's a 4-seat car. Like I feel like that would be. You could tone down the lines a little bit, make it a little bit more bubbly or whatever. And man, that'd be such a cool car. Like, because I don't need a $250,000 car. I don't.
Nah.
But man, I would love to have that.
Probably still gonna get one though.
if you guys keep buying Model X's and S's from my code, maybe
keep using our referral codes, and we'll get one either way.
Please.
Yeah, every time we see it, we're like, "Ooh!" I check out my app. Well, where am I right now? Every time I see a picture of the car coming up, but yeah, it's an awesome looking car. So yeah, the other thing that you said about it was the SpaceX package that was also announced at the shareholder meeting that sort of said that the spec that were announced last November are going to be the base version, and the SpaceX package is going to have even crazier specs. But now it's not clear if is it the SpaceX package going to be inside the Thunder series, or is it going to be something separate from the Thunder series and the base version?
Who knows?
Yeah.
Sometimes I wonder if this is actually has any thought, or he's just like, "Whoa, a SpaceX package would be cool," and he just like, "We're gonna make a SpaceX package."
Yeah, I think it's like the Tesla Semi thing, where they just because they have a working prototype of that Roadster. We've seen it, we've been in it, and everything. So I think the same thing, that they have it in the test program right now. It's getting some mileage on the road, and they figure out where it is optimization to increase the power the power performance, and they've done it.
So what about, okay, so today, I think today, Elon responded to MKBHD saying that the Roadster is going to have, it's going to be like Iron Man, where it's like a suit, and it just envelops you, and you just have to think about going 255 miles per hour, and that happens.
I'm not sure he said that exactly.
Oh, yeah. I think I'm paraphrasing.
You're paraphrasing at this point. But yeah, what he called it is the augmented mode. But it was in reference to MKBHD asking about autopilot being in the Roadster, which he actually already announced last year that it's going to have autopilot. But then Elon added that it's going to have autopilot, it's going to also have augmented mode, and it's going to make human driving better. So the way I see it as a mode that pretty much helps you drive that car, so you're still driving. It's not autonomous driving, because I mean, it's a sports car, you want to be able to drive it, but it's going to help you with something like the torque vectoring, or even traction control, or more advanced traction control, and things like that, just to automate some part of the driving experience to be able to handle that kind of power. Because I mean, a lot of people, well, everyone that's getting that car has never been in a car as powerful, unless you've been like in an F1 or something like that, because it's going to be the highest the more powerful production car on the market at that point, at least it should be at this point. And so it's going to be a big difference for everyone, but I think it's going to be an even bigger difference for a lot of people that buy the car, because I think it's going to be the first supercar. Their first supercar, I think.
Oh, yeah, because most supercars are over $1 million.
Yeah.
And this thing's going to be started at $200,000. That's like...
So it's still not for everybody, but I think a lot more people is going to be able is going to buy it, mm-hmm. and also through the referral program. I mean, a lot of people is going to buy it through that too. People that normally I think wouldn't buy the car necessarily, even like if you get like 30% discount on it or something like that, it's like, oh, maybe I'm going to buy it, and then you have all that power in your hands, and it's going to be hard to handle. So I think the augmented mode is going to be about that. But also people start talking about augmented reality. And of course, with that comment, like you said, it's like the Iron Man suit that Elon said. Iron Man suit, of course, has a big augmented reality system in the mask. So people make reference to that. And I mean, I'd like to see... Do you call a heads up display augmented reality?
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's kind of like... You know, you see the real world, and then it's like the Terminator display where...
Yeah, but know, I think augmented reality is... I think what's shown to you as to interact with the world, too. And I think, like, a heads-up display just it interacts with, like, the windshield, even though it's not directly in the windshield, but to the driver, it looks like it's in the windshield. I don't think, like, it's... Like... For me, an augmented reality system in a car wouldn't just be a heads-up display. It would be inside the heads-up display, like you can see the road, and it tells you a little bit. Have you ever played those like Gran Turismo video games and stuff like mm-hmm. that?
Yeah.
You can get a beginner's mode where it tells you where to slow down, where to brake, and stuff like that. If you can get that inside the heads-up display, then that's augmented reality to me. Like if you get something like that.
I mean, it's a sports car. It's a race car. Maybe I don't know if you ever seen those on TV, but they have like a guy sitting shotgun, saying, you know, third gear
in
turn.
Rallies. Yeah,
yeah. I wonder if it'll be something like that, where instead of just mapping, you've got like, okay, you got to slow down a lot right here or whatever.
Inside the heads up display, you mean?
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's what I was thinking too. That would be great. It's not exactly what he said. We're speculating right now, but it's. Certainly within the possibilities, I think.
Right. All right, so should we talk about Model 3?
Yeah, we never talk about the Model 3, so I'm going to make an exception this time and talk about the Model 3. Best-selling mid-size premium sedan in the U.S. So Tesla released a new graph that they already told us last month with the earnings call. They said it's about to become the best-selling mid-size sedan in the U.S. And now with the shareholders meeting, they said in May, with the last surge of orders in May, it actually became the best-selling one, slightly surpassing the Mercedes C-Class, because it's the mid-size premium sedan. So the other one that they put on the market, because they went by the market share, and there's the C-Class, there's the Audi A4, BMW 3 Series, and the Lexus IS. And right now, it looks like Tesla sits at about 30% market share. Mercedes market share went down over the last month below 30%, so Tesla took the run, and the BMW 3 Series is the one that's been losing a lot, like from 35% a few months back to now below 20%.
Yeah, I mean, that's got to be a wake-up call for BMW, if anybody. And 3 Series is, you know, quite popular. I mean, they were, in November of 2017, the most popular, and also in January and February, the most popular premium midsize. Was it midsize? Yeah, midsize car. And now, you know, they're in third place. Actually, they just fell below the Audi A4 this month. So that's got to be a wake-up call for them.
Yeah, and we had some indication of that over the last few years, like a few people that were reserving the Model 3 when we did surveys about what car are you going to be exchanging for the Model 3. The top car that was in the survey was the 3 Series, so that people are exchanging their car for the 3 Series. Also, like, just the 3 Series was for a long time the most popular midsize sedan. So, of course, if a new one comes to market, if you're going to steal the market share from someone, it's going to be the top one. And the most market share that you can steal it from, it's the one that has the most. So it makes
also sense. I mean, I think Elon Musk said something about this, but the Tesla Model 3 is one model. Like, it's got one configuration. Like, you can pick the tires, and you can pick the color, and that's pretty much it. Whereas we're talking about the 3 Series, so that's the 330, the 330i, you know, the whole range of 3 cars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's going to be a bloodbath in a couple of months when they hit 5,000 and 10,000.
Yeah, I think the real impact we're going to see more next year once you have all the configuration available, but also once all of the reservation, the people that had the long time reservation get their car, and now people can get the car sooner in the US at least. And all those people that got the Model 3 become like Tesla ambassadors and start selling the Model 3 like they always did in the past for other Tesla vehicles. So I think it's going to be, like you said, the bloodbath is the right word.
And it's, you know, as you said, it's important to mention that this isn't like the people who are getting the car now ordered them sight unseen, probably lined up for them or, you know, a day, you know, right after. So, like, we are just scratching the surface of the demand for this car, and it's only going to go up. Like, they, you know, Tesla will not catch up to demand probably for years. Like, because, you know, everybody I've shown it to has been, and, you know, these are people, wide variety of spectrum of income and whatever. Pretty much everybody has said, this is going to be my next car. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not even, like, you know, like, it's not even question.
It's because of the excitement of it. Like, there's a lot of things that are exciting about the
Model 3.
And just the new BMW 3 Series, there's nothing that exciting about it. It's a great car. Like, the series are great. But there's not enough things that are different about it from the rest of the offering in the market. So.
Right.
Really excited.
I mean, we reviewed the 330e. That was, you know, it was a fun car. You know, it
barely
had its problems.
Electric, though.
Yeah, I mean, it was only electric if you were like kind of golf cart mode.
Yeah,
but you know, at least there was something. And you know,
aside from the powertrain, it's a great car.
Yeah, aside from the powertrain, it's a great car. You know, good performance, good. I think, you know, a lot of people will appreciate the traditional interior versus the, you know, one display. Although I feel like I'm getting used to the one display a little bit more than I had been in the past, and it's kind of grown on me. But, you know, everybody's going to be different in that area.
Yeah. We have Andy Andrew, who says in the comment, the real bloodbath will be when BMW and Daimler put their engineering prowess behind BEVs. Maybe.
When are they going to do that?
Yeah, well, we're going to check it out later this month. Actually, I'm going to Germany to see BMW's latest engineering prowess in terms of all electric vehicles. So I'm going to be able to give you a much better opinion on that at the end of the month.
And but, I'm going to see Jaguar's I-Pace.
Yeah, when is that? When are you doing?
I leave Sunday.
Sunday,
you're 2 days.
Yeah.
I'm packing my bags.
So Seth is going to be able to give you his opinion on the I-Pace. I won't be able to give you an opinion on the new BMW. I don't think so. I don't think they're going to show me a new car, but they're going to show me all their next-gen battery and powertrain technology for all their new BEVs coming to market. I'm not sure if the Mini is going to be involved in that, but most likely. The iX3 is coming too. iNEXT, maybe. That might be the iNEXT. We're going to see what...
I feel like they're schlepping you all the way from Montreal to Germany. They should show you at least a few cars, like something.
Yeah, I don't know. We're going to see. Don't get my hopes up. I mean, I'm okay just seeing batteries this time.
Really?
Well,
okay.
Good batteries, like if they really did make improvements on this.
Maybe they'll have like an i3 autocross.
Oh boy.
Or an i8 autocross even.
Yeah. Yeah, i8 maybe, even though I probably won't be just electric power, but yeah, I don't want to do another cross in the i3.
Right.
With those bike tires on them. But yeah. Staying on the Model 3, they at the same time at the shareholder meeting, Elon gives like some quick update on the production number. Said that after the production shutdown last week, they're back at 500 cars per week in all of their production processes. So altogether, that's still over 3,500 cars per week, like they were last month before the update. And now with the update, with the new production line starting to come up, they're going to be able to ramp up to that 5,000 cars a week by the end of the quarter, so that's the end of the month. Elon seemed really confident in that target, which I think was the biggest impact on shareholders. Like, so that's what all shareholders are looking at. And once he said that, I think that's what helped a lot on the stock price rising last Wednesday. Another cool thing that came out too was an update on the supercharger V3 that Tesla announced on Twitter, in conversation with me on Twitter almost 2 years ago now. It was not 2 years ago, in December 2016. And a few weeks back, he said that it's going to come late this summer. And I said more toward the end of the year instead, that the first station is going to come online. Well, he also went back to what he said about... Because when he first announced them, I asked when I'm going to see more solar arrays combined with the supercharger. And then Elon said that it's going to be when supercharger V3 comes, because it's going to be a better integration with the PowerPack V2 and solar production, solar energy production. So now he said it again that... with the supercharger V3 coming later this year, it's going to have a much smoother integration with the battery system. So there's going to be more batteries installed with each new station, with new supercharger station. And we've seen some of those lately, like in the UK, Tesla did it with a few of their supercharger stations. They had the power packs. But now it looks like it's going to be part of their program with the supercharger V3. So that he came back again with the zombie apocalypse proof system, which
what does that mean?
I mean, in the likely impossible, I don't think that's a really real possibility of a zombie apocalypse, but it just sounds cool. If like all the grids shut down, you could technically take the supercharger station off grid, and by having the supercharger off grid, you could still plug your car into it, and if there's enough solar energy generation that are stored in the power packs, you can still use a supercharger. But we've talked about that before. Like, of course, right now there's a big disparities between supercharger station usage, but one supercharger station that is fairly well used It needs a lot of power. Like at 120 kilowatts right now, and the supercharger V3 supposedly is going to be higher than that, closer to 200 and 250 kilowatts. I mean, you need a lot of solar power stored in the power packs. So we're talking about a decent sized solar array here. Not sure if they can be able to put that everywhere. Just I don't see it unless they drastically change their type of supercharge station, much like the one in Kittleman City, which has already like three quite large solar arrays on the parking lot. We never did figure out though what's the capacity of that, right? I don't think we did.
I don't think so.
But yeah, it's exciting. End of the year, supercharger V3. And of course, I think it's going to come with something else. Like, if the charge rate is higher, then you need a car that's able to take that higher charge rate.
Some Model S and X updates.
Maybe. Yeah.
I think that's a good time for the Gigafactory to have enough battery power or enough battery output to start. Because right now the Model S and X are taking 18650s from Japan, from Panasonic and others. And it clearly seems like the Model 3 has a superior battery. So it would be surprising to me if at some point the Model S and X don't get the bigger batteries.
Yeah. Yeah, he did talk about that a few times, but it looks like they have been going back and forth on it. Also, he did say at the shareholder meeting, like when asked about the Model S, he said like Model S is now at the like third generation Model S, even though they never really announced a full refresh other than the like the facelift and a few like interior modifications stuff like that. It wasn't really like a next gen Model S announced. So there's not really a good indication other than it makes sense to have a refresh Model S and X. Tesla's never given an indication about that. And of course, they wouldn't because of the impact on sales. As soon as you say that the new Model S and X is coming, then people stop buying it. And
yeah, I mean, in the last couple of updates, they've been quiet. And, you know, they announce it just as they're reaching customers. So customers who thought they bought the previous version have gotten an upgraded version. And you kind of have to do that because otherwise you get a whole bunch of inventory that's called Osborning, I think, in the computer world, where you announce something ahead of time, then all the current stuff becomes, you know, worthless or pointless.
So if it happens, it should probably happen just the same way. It's going to be a surprise. And so if we try to speculate on timing, we think the Supercharger V3 unveiling timing should make sense. But speaking of combining the Supercharger V3 with power packs, a third-party charging station company did it with the power packs themselves. In the Netherlands, they unveiled that this week, earlier this week. A big charging station with 20 stalls, all level 2 though, and a big solar array on top, three solar arrays around the parking lot. And they linked that to a 400 kilowatt, 800 kilowatt hour power pack system so that you can basically drive on sunlight day and night, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, that's the dream, right?
Yeah, you just want to replicate that model again and again and again until you convert all that gas mileage into solar energy mileage.
Yeah, level 2, though, that's a little slow.
Yeah, but it's not Tesla, though. Well, Tesla can charge there, but like right now they're charging like Renault Zoe.
They could add CHAdeMO and had a bunch of adapters. Also, what's nice about level 3 is you don't have the DC to AC conversion because the batteries and solar spit out DC. So you have to convert it to AC and then it goes into the car through and then is converted back into DC in the car. So you lose, 10% or something of the power in that conversion.
Which is disappointing. Well, of course, it's still a lot better than the conventional range of gas into propulsion. Still on the supercharger subject, Tesla is there was a surprisingly big post this week, and when we talked about Tesla adding squeegee station to the supercharger, stations, starting with the Kettleman City one that we talked about earlier. But apparently, they're also adding to a few others. And there was one in Missouri that was found with also in a different squeegee station. So, of course, Tesla's trying to replace the gas station experience without gas. And some people use those squeegees at the gas station, even though sometimes they make your car even dirtier than they were before.
Sometimes they're disgusting. It's weird. One of my early suggestions to Tesla was whenever you sell a Tesla, you should just give people squeegees because you'll never be at a gas station again where typically people use the squeegees to kind of clear the windshield. It's funny that they're finally coming online at these stations. Like, I would say this to new Tesla owners is you need a squeegee, unless you want to go to a gas station and piss off some people and reverse ice them while you're
ice them,
right? You need a squeegee. You're gonna hit bugs and dirt, like your windshield's gonna get dirty. You're gonna need a cleaning every once in a while.
Yeah. And we talked about before, like, we had a report on it when Tesla at some point started testing a program to have car washes at supercharger, but like N-Wash system, like just Eco Green Auto Clean, they're called, and they have like an old process that can clean your car with like a cup of water or something like that. They tested it at the supercharger in Fremont. And when we talked to the guys that were running the program, it was apparently looking to expand it to other supercharger station, like give them, like pay them to, while you're supercharging, you can clean your car. But never happened. That was back in 2016 in the program.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like expanded. No. That's a bummer. It'd be nice to, like, you know, you stop at a supercharger, you pay somebody to detail your car, you go shopping and pick up some stuff, and you get into a brand new clean car. That'd be...
Yeah, for the supercharger station that are popular ones, like when they're almost always full or something like that, close to that, then it makes sense, because even like if only, I don't know, 5% of the people want to pay for it, you pretty much always have a customer, almost.
In fact, it might not be a bad idea for some enterprising young,
just
hang out with a bucket and some Armor All or whatever.
Yeah,
maybe. Well,
sure, my car needs cleaning right now. So if I had to stop at a supercharger and someone was there, and of course, like, it's a $100,000 car, and some people are like very careful about who can, like, they want to see some Yelp reviews before giving the car to a car wash or something like that.
Yeah, you want to have the Tesla seal of approval on that.
Yeah. So if Tesla approves it, then it's easier if it's the company approved by Tesla.
But. And then, you know, when the guy like either steals your car or destroys it, you can blame Tesla.
Yeah. And Elon Musk also said about, at the same time, that's not the only amenities he's going to add to the supercharger station. They're also going to add some air pressure system, so you can check your tire pressure. Well, you already see your tire pressure on the dash, but if you need some all fixed up, you just plug and increase your tire pressure a little bit.
Or decrease it down to 39 PSIs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We didn't
for that
talk
smooth
about
ride.
That last week, right? I don't think he talked about it. Yeah, he
Musk
did say that.
Said that if you don't mind losing 2% of your range on your Model 3, reduce the air pressure down to 39 PSI, which I think it comes with 44, you will have a much smoother ride, which I have not tried yet, but I look forward to trying it.
Yeah, a little bit more comfort on the ride, but you lose some range, of course. Speaking of the Model 3, he also mentioned when the lease are coming for a lease program coming from Model 3. He said 6 to 9 months this is going to start leasing the Model 3.
I mean, that goes into the bloodbath. Like, we're just on the cusp. Like, no leases. There's no, like, 80% of the people who have BMWs are leasing it. It's going
to
be ugly.
Yeah, now you have to pay for it with either cash or with a loan. Tesla's going to offer the option. And his excuse for not having it at the launch was, of course, when Tesla's a lease program, they have to put up a lot more capital up front and spread the revenue on a longer period of time, so that affects their cash flow in the short term. And their goal is to be profitable by the end of the year. So they're going to push that program once they are profitable, so that they just can show that Wall Street a little bit that they made some money put the nail in the coffin of those short sellers on Wall Street. The other thing about the Model 3 too was that you're going to do some test drive. That's the other thing we were talking to earlier. You can't even get a test drive in the Model 3 right now.
That's crazy.
The display fleet has grown a lot over the last year or so, over the last 6 months or so. It's pretty much in every car, in every Tesla store in North America or very close to it. So you can see it, you can sit in it, but you cannot test drive it. So he said that they're going to start building the fleet to test drive the vehicles. And they are even going to do it with the performance version when it's going to come out. So, of course, they want to sell the higher-end version. So they're going to get your ass in the seat of the most performance, the one with the most performance. But we remember, like, a while back, Tesla also released an update, a software update, where they can change the performance of the – they can emulate the powertrain performance of each trim of the Model S and X. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
You can enter in the center screen. You can enter like you have a 90D, but you can technically make it perform like a 75D, for example. So if you have the performance Model 3, then you can emulate the dual motor Model 3 without the performance package. You can emulate the rear-wheel drive Model 3. You can emulate the, once the standard battery pack is going to be available, you could emulate also the standard battery pack version of the rear-wheel drive Model 3, of the all-wheel drive Model 3. So if your test drive fleet is made of performance Model 3, then you can have people like the owner advisor can give a test drive to someone, start with the performance version. I said, that's too expensive for me. Oh, that's too rich for my blood. It's too fast or whatever. Then you can just switch it and go try the all-wheel drive version. Maybe you can just work the all-wheel drive version. That's the price for it. See how it feels, the speeds and whatever, and make their sales like that. So I think that's a big advantage that Tesla has over the traditional dealership model. And that's starting this month, I think.
Soon.
Yeah, very soon.
I imagine they'll probably go to the big place, you know, big showrooms first, big cities.
Yeah, the most popular, yeah.
And Los Angeles, kind of work their way out.
Los Angeles, New York, going to have the test fleet first. Then it's going to grow from there. Moving on to autopilot, real quick, Musk announced an update that's coming this week, and we just reported today it started rolling out, and the first owners got the update. Earlier this week, we were told by some people in the test fleet they receive a beta update. Some improvement to the auto-steer traffic over cruise control system, just incremental improvement, nothing crazy. But the feature about the renderings on the instrument cluster that shows the vehicle on each side of the Tesla and not just the one in front of you in the same lane, that came out in the beta version of the program like a month or two ago. But when the wide release came out, it wasn't in it. This time was the same thing. Not the same thing. It wasn't the beta version of the software, but it wasn't also in the wide release. So now if you get the 2018.21.9 update in your Autopilot 2.0 car, you're going to get the new rendering on the instrument cluster. It still doesn't show bikes or trucks like it did with first-gen Autopilot. But you can still see the cars on each side, which doesn't do much really. Like it's more of a because you don't rely on it to to take any driving decision. I mean, you need to look up.
Yeah, I don't think it's gonna help anybody get from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. But I guess it inspires confidence that you know it's recognizing more than just the cars in front of you.
Yeah. Yeah, it shows that the system is still improving and still having a difference. And Elon said that he talked about timing. He hasn't talked about that for a while. Timing of a new enhanced autopilot feature, so the on-ramp, off-ramp feature that was supposed to basically completely automate assist on the highway from going into the highway, taking an off-ramp, so either changing highway or getting off the highway. He said in the next couple of months. So he said he already tried the latest build himself, was getting close to being ready for release, and that's coming in the next couple of months. And that's, of course, building on the latest rewrite of Tesla's neural net for autopilot that came out back in March. And this week update is the latest incremental improvement of that. And Elon thinks that in the next 2 months, it could lead to the first actual... officially they say that the AutoSteer Plus is already out and that the AutoSteer is improved enough from AP1 to AP2 to be AutoSteer Plus. So technically, it's not the first new feature under the Enhanced Autopilot program, but for a lot of people, I think they're going to consider it the first one. That, and of course, the third one is the Smart Summon, I think it's called. Smart Summon, so a more advanced summon system that not just like going forward and backward a little bit to get out of the driveway. You can actually navigate.
Maybe more. It picks you up at your front door or something.
Yeah, something similar. If you like pin particular to your driveway, you can just get on the street and pull up to our front door or something.
You just jump in the car as it's driving by you. You just jump in and you don't have to slow down.
The last thing that we're going to talk about really quick about that was announced at the shareholder meeting is the body shops. So the Tesla-owned body shop are coming by the end of the month, apparently. And so that's something that's still been an issue. Like Tesla has been working hard on it for the past year, completely revamping their body shop program with third parties body shops. And they accepted a ton of other new body shop in the program, but apparently wasn't enough to fix the issues because, well, we're still getting reports of long wait times from owners after accidents that need body work. So Tesla's final solution on it is like, all right, like usual, we go in the house instead of going with third party, open our own body shop. And some of it's going to be annexed to service centers. So it's going to be with service centers. And Elon said that within the end of the month, they're going to be in the 10 biggest metropoles in North America. So that's a lot of body shops. And the
Yeah, go ahead. Do you remember in 2015, Tesla hired, I don't know if he's even still there, Kenny Handcammer, who was an F1 and Red Bull guy, pit guy, like supposedly like one of the best. Mm-hmm. I wonder if this is like the, you know, what he's been working on or what that group was working on.
Yeah, well, I know that a lot of things that he was working on was with the service center, like the fast lane of the service center. That was his project, and so I don't know exactly if the body shops were his project too, because I think he left Tesla like not too long after Tesla started working on those.
Right, he did leave Tesla, but I just wonder if that's like, you know, the long term vision was what
yeah, inspired it's a, hiring. It's a real possibility. But yeah, let us know if you see one of those body shop in your hometown soon, because we should really see them in the next couple of weeks, really. And the big thing is that he's promising that maybe some same day repair is going to happen, which would be a big difference compared to the months of delays that we've seen so far. And my big thing on it is like, so how many things different that they can make with their own body shop that they couldn't do with the third party? Because the third party's excuses was always, it's not our fault. It's Tesla that is not sending us the parts.
And, right, and they're also gouging people. I had a repair.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was, you know, my insurance paid for it, but I was like dumbfounded how much it costs. And I have to imagine that, you know, that's turning up. You know, that gouging is turning up in Tesla insurance premiums. That's probably why you know, Teslas are a little bit more expensive to insure. So maybe this is a way to prevent that from happening.
Yeah, because technically and he said they were aiming to bring the cost down. So if they can successfully bring the cost down, then it's not impossible that it could actually affect the premiums on the insurance. So you can see the insurance come down on the in long term, because I mean, I think there are hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of third party Tesla body shop right now, and like a dozen Tesla company owners are going to be a drop in the bucket compared to that. But in the long term, yeah, it could have an impact. Real quick, we have almost an hour in and we only talked about Tesla, but we are moving on now to Daimler, because Daimler had a big announcement yesterday. They unveiled the e-Cascadia. And another also all-electric truck. And what's interesting, of course, is that it comes after Daimler made some interesting comments about Tesla Semi, saying that Tesla Semi was breaking the laws of physics if the specs that were announced were true, and that Tesla is passing them by. if it's the case, but they were like, the way they was, they said it, it's like, it's not true, it's not happening, and they were sort of trying to induce doubt in people that Tesla could deliver on the Tesla Semi specs. Right. And now it makes a lot more sense, because that comment was made by Martin Down, who's the head of trucks at Daimler, and he probably said that, because he said that just a few months ago, while knowing the specs of their eCascadia, they were already working on it, and they reached sort of a limit on it, and it doesn't compete at all with Tesla Semi, so the only thing they could think of that why it's not competing with Tesla Semi is because the Tesla Semi specs are not real. I mean, that's the way I see it, because those specs, where are they?
You can almost imagine the CEO going, what are you talking, you know, like, Tesla just announced this 500 or 600 mile thing. You're coming to me with this 125 miles of range. That's crazy. And he's like, oh no, Tesla's full of it. Like, yeah, that's not real.
Yeah, it's not 125 though. It's a little bit more than that. They managed to fit in the Cascadia a 550 kilowatt hour battery pack, and they say that's good enough for 250 miles of range. That's 400 kilometers.
That's half, almost.
Yeah, that's about half of Tesla's range. And what's interesting too about it is that the Cascadia, which is a Freightliner's most popular Class 8 truck, big vehicle program for them, and the last generation was led by Jérôme Guillem, who's now in charge of the Tesla Semi program. So I think there's some competition there where, like, we have to have a response to Tesla Semi, and that's the response that he gets. Because the Fuso, which is also a truck brand owned by Daimler, unveiled the eFuso last year. But I think that was 125 miles or something like that. That was a big truck, but a lot shorter range. And it was unveiled like right before Tesla Semi. Like, they tried to steal a Thunder or something. But
yeah, I think Tesla getting their battery prices down to under $100 per kilowatt hour
at the cell level.
At the cell level and eventually at the pack level,
yeah,
is going to prove to be an incredible advantage, like in the trucks, in the cars.
Yeah, because they didn't talk about pricing. They said that they're going to deliver that 30 units by the end of the year in North America, which is great. I mean, that's awesome. On timing, looks like they're going to beat Tesla. But they didn't talk about the price. I mean, how much are those going to cost?
No idea. I like that they have school buses, though.
Yeah, we talked about those. That's the other thing we should mention. With the unveiling of this truck and another one, also like a urban distribution truck, Freightliner M2 106 with 230 miles of range, but it's a smaller truck. With those two unveiling, they also announced a new electric truck group where they're going to share all their expertise in the electric powertrain between all the different trucks, because Daimler has like a dozen truck brands or something like that.
Yeah, they're all over the place.
Yeah, so yeah, they have also an electric school bus brand, a school bus brand that's now doing electric vehicles. We reported that a few months back. And
Bluebird and Lion, the other two big school bus makers, at least in the U.S., also have electric offerings already.
Yeah. Lions is the leader right now in terms of quantities. Like, they've been doing it for longer, so they have a lot of electric school buses on the road. But yeah, Bird is also coming up, and a few others. Jaguar this week. Jaguar invited, like we said, they invited Seth, but Seth is only next week. But before that, there were separately other rounds of inviting bloggers and YouTubers and people like that to test drive.
Yeah, it felt like the first round was right side drive folks.
Mm-hmm.
I saw, you know, a lot of the video reviews were right side, you know, obviously in the UK. Jaguar originally was a UK brand. I think a few American writers were in there, but they were of international publications. So, you know, we're getting in there next week. I'll probably do a series of posts on the experience. Judging by the videos, and I just saw one of my favorites, Fully Charged, Robert Llewellyn, and he's always a good video to watch. it looked like they're going off road. They're going, you know, up very steep hills. Looks like it's going to be fully quite charged. A bit of fun.
Was it the same route that you're going to take? Is it going to be in Portugal too?
No. He just went. So there's actually four rounds, and I'm in the third one. So he was in the second.
But was it also because I didn't see the video? Was it also in Portugal?
Yeah, it was in Portugal.
So it's gonna be the same thing that you're gonna do next week, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
It's a little bit anticlimactic, but
yeah. I mean, they should have given an embargo on that, because I mean, you could just watch this video and you know what you're gonna do next week.
Well, maybe I'll take it off the path or something, to mix it up a little bit.
Go in Spain instead.
I'll veer off. I'll hit some CSS chargers. I'll have the cops chasing me. It'll be great.
Yeah, the Jaguar's gonna be chasing you before the cops.
Yeah, I won't be going in. This will be my last iPace review, or last Jaguar review.
No, because I think we're gonna love the car. I mean, just for one.
Yeah, it sounds good. I mean, the early reactions are good, and I'm actually pretty kind of excited.
Yeah, pretty sure he's gonna like it. The other car that we're pretty excited for that's coming to market is the Mission E. And two things that happened this week, like just earlier today, they announced the actual name of the car. So we're gonna stop calling the car the Mission E, but probably we're gonna still call it that for a while and use both names until sort of a little transition period until everyone gets used to the name. It's called. I haven't heard it out loud yet, so I assume it's pronounced Taycan. Taycan.
Taycan.
Taycan.
Yeah, it was like it's gotten taken.
Taken?
I don't know. I'm assuming it's just going to...
It's not
people are going to call it...
Like
Taken.
Thailand? Thailand?
Tay? T-A-Y. Tay. Taken? I don't know.
Taken. All right. I'm going to call it Taken. The Mission E is not called
Taken.
Like a toucan.
Like a bird.
Yeah, because we knew that the Mission E was unveiled as a concept vehicle, even though Porsche said that it's the concepts should be close to the production version. But it was unveiled as the Mission E concept. So that was always the name of the concept and not necessarily the production car. So the production car has a name more with Porsche usual naming scheme, just like the Cayman and the Macan and the Panamera. And now it's the Taycan. Is that what we're saying? No, Taycan. All right. Other thing this week, another thing that we're invited to, come on Porsche, they brought a few people to Malibu to test the Mission E Gran Turismo version, which is basically the Mission E in a CUV format, and they gave some test drives, nothing too in-depth, not like the I-Pace or anything like that, but still some cool insights, so we posted a few of those videos on the next track. And an interesting one was with, what's his name, Stefan Wigback, who's the head of the BEV programs at Porsche. And he quickly addressed the little controversy that a lot of the media are pushing about the Tesla killer term, which a lot of the media applied to basically any new vehicles that comes to market that's all electric. And they've been doing it with the Porsche Mission E since it was unveiled in 2015, which we've been saying is crazy because that was 4 years ahead of production, and even the specs that he unveiled back then wasn't competitive with Tesla's Model S at this point. But of course, they still have updated a few things. It's looks like it'll be a great car, but it's not gonna be a Tesla killer. And Stefan actually agreed with that. The actual big fan of Tesla. They said that Tesla's done a wonderful job. I'm quoting, it was done a wonderful job driving electric mobility. And their focus is not on Tesla, even though they did benchmark their car in the Model S. We've reported on that before. They bought a bunch of Model S and Model X vehicles, and they benchmarked the powertrain against the Model S. But their main focus, they said, is that to make, I'm quoting again here, make the Mission E become a real Porsche. And that's exciting to me because, of course, Porsche has a great reputation in terms of handling, in terms of just a sport car feel, luxury feel. If they can bring that to an all-electric Porsche, it's not only going to compete with other electric vehicles, it's going to convert some petrol heads, some big fan of Porsche who wouldn't normally think to go electric. It's going to convince them to go electric, and instead of when they're going to buy their next Porsche, it's going to be maybe a Mission E, a Taycan. So I was pretty excited about this comment. I don't know about you.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of Porsche's marketing at this point, because we saw in the Adam Levine video last week that, you know, the message was, this is a Porsche, it's not an EV. This is a you know, this is the driving experience of a Porsche. It seems like that is what we're going to hear from Porsche, you know, up to time to sell. That this is not, you know, a Tesla wannabe, Tesla-ish car. This is not, you know, like you drove a Tesla, this is the same thing. They're pushing people to think this is a Porsche that's also electric. And, you know, it's a smart move, because, you know, in a lot of fronts and a lot of specs, the Teslas are, you know, still better than Porsche. Porsche will have faster charging, it sounds like. They have a much more a different kind of interior, like more of a traditional, like a sport interior rather than a kind of a
minimalist
design look that Tesla does. So, you know, I see where Porsche is going. I think it's good for everybody, you know, that isn't an oil company. So I'm all for it.
Yes.
Let's get a test drive.
Yeah. When I saw that, I reached out to Porsche. Hey, we're worth inviting to that. I mean, our readers want to hear about the Mission E. We want to hear our thoughts about it. And I want to sit in it. And I want to drive it. So invite me, guys. But yeah, another thing, we're going to leave you with that in mind. And again, next week, we're going to come back with the I-Pace review, which I think you're going to release throughout the week, right? You're going to release day by day or something like that?
Yeah, I'm going to try to do a few posts. And we should also mention our sponsor.
Yeah, I was going to do that. sorry about that. We're gonna leave you with that. Thanks a lot to our Patreon supporters. You can go to patreon.com/electrek. Thanks a lot to this week's sponsor of the show too, Wonder Capital. So, like we said earlier, Wonder Capital is a great company. It's the best way to invest in solar other than yourself buying a solar array system for your house. Of course, there can be plenty of reasons why you cannot do that. Or if you already did, then maybe you want to invest even more money in solar energy. And what Wonder Capital allows you to do is to invest in bigger commercial solar project where they pull the money from the investor to finance the upfront cost of a solar project to be installed, and then they get revenue from that project from the electricity generation that the solar project make, and they send a return back to the investor, and that return can be up to 7.5% annually, which is of course a great great money to make from financing solar project, which is also good for the environment and the economy. So if you want to invest in Wonder Capital, you can go to wondercapital.com/electrek. That's wondercapital.com/electrek. And we're going to see you next week. Bye-bye.